You have to think about the downstream effects too, right? Obviously, we spent the last few minutes here talking about purchasing a prescription at the pharmacy counter. But when consumers don't purchase it, and I've sat with many pharmacy executives who say once a drug gets over $20-25, people just say, ah, screw it, I won't get it. And of course, you think about that transaction in and of itself, but then you don't realize, okay, so now the consumer stopped taking their heart medications, and now the consumer ends up having additional medical issues, may end up in the ER, may end up not being able to work, take care of their children. I mean, the downstream effects are huge, right? And consumers have filled over 184 million prescriptions using GoodRx that they otherwise simply literally would have walked away and not purchased. We've saved the healthcare system over $5 billion in preventable ER visits and hospitalizations. You know, these are the kinds of things that we don't think about. We think about that individual transaction. But when you stop taking the medication you're supposed to take and you're not adhering to your regimen, you have these incredible downstream effects, which honestly, we talk about dollars and cents and profit and loss. I think about the country as a whole. I think about our health system as a whole, where we have all these incredible costs as a result of just making it so hard for people to get from point A to point B and just fill their prescription at that counter.
New choices, new players, new models of care. You know, consumer-first healthcare is everywhere. For us to build the future, to see what's new, we gotta look at the world from a different point of view. Consumer innovation ain't going away. I say it's here to stay. Today it leads the way. We gotta drop the silos. We're all the same team. Experience, business, tech, and marketing. So join us now. Join the revolution. Consumer-first health is the evolution. Status quo, or like status no. Yeah, this is the healthcare rap. Yo, come on, let's go.
Hey, welcome back to the leading podcast for consumer experience champions in healthcare. This is episode 331. I'm Jared Johnson, and here's what's going to go down today. This is the start of season 11, so we have the flavor of the week about this season's theme of engaging the modern health consumer. How do we make the total healthcare experience what it was always meant to be? And what's our destination as we redefine what engagement means? I'll talk about that. Then we kick off the season with the co-founder of GoodRx, Doug Hirsch. Doug is candid about the intentional and unintentional effects of rising drug costs, the downstream effects when consumers don't fill their prescriptions, and how GoodRx puts a lot of effort into things like reducing the amount of information that's shown to a member at one time to help simplify their decision-making in what's otherwise often a highly confusing time. You know what I'm going to say next. It's time to dive right in. Are you ready? Let's go.
Flavor of the week.
Season 11 is going to be fire, y'all, so buckle up. It's true, this episode starts our 11th season, and I'm beyond excited to share our new theme of how to engage the modern health consumer. And there's more packed into those words than you might think at first, because while it's related to our themes of the past few seasons, it emphasizes the word engagement and implies that there's more to health and wellness than just engaging patients during episodic sick care. In other words, it's time to make the total healthcare experience what it was always meant to be, an individualized end-to-end journey that is frictionless or close to it, that no longer leads people to avoid care because of the cost, inconvenience, or lack of access. And all of that at scale with the help of technology. The healthcare experience isn't actually meant to start with scheduling an appointment or end by walking out of an exam room. It's a lifelong pursuit of health and wellness with higher expectations than ever before. We have to break the dual cycles. Providers can no longer outsource their complexity to consumers, and consumers can no longer place the burden of their high expectations solely on providers. So how do we get there? Let's start by looking a little more closely at where we want to go, and that starts with where we've been. Personally, for years, I've wrestled with the question of misaligned incentives in the fee-for-service system. I've wrestled with the reality that in the bread-and-butter health system business model, it's good for more people to be sick and unhealthy. Everything else seems to spin off of that reality, and that has given me more heartburn and cognitive dissonance than anything else while working in healthcare for nearly 20 years. It's one reason why I've explored care model innovations such as value-based care and direct primary care, and other models that align incentives of consumers with society at large and the growing business of the provider. Maybe not perfectly or at scale, but at least it's easier to sleep at night knowing somewhere in the healthcare value chain the incentives are aligned. I've also found hope by realizing that the answers are not mutually exclusive. We don't have to choose between traditional sick care making a profit and people in society staying healthy. And here's the key, folks. Consumer experience is a catalyst. My thesis is that properly understanding, prioritizing, and implementing consumer experience strategies makes both things possible. Okay, so back to the theme for season 11. There are three reasons why we want to focus on engaging the modern health consumer. Number one, I've found that most definitions of engagement are short-sighted and not inclusive enough. In what ways are they short-sighted, you ask? By only focusing on sick care, by only focusing on growing one bottom line, only focusing on acquisition, only focusing on those who are already sick, only focusing on those with commercial insurance, only focusing on the EHR ecosystem, and especially only focusing on the foundation of the status quo encounters that no one wants to experience in their current way. Number two, it's possible to engage in more ways than ever before. The doors have been blown wide open thanks to unprecedented advancements in engagement tech. More healthcare organizations have dedicated innovation teams and leaders, plus non-traditional players, or if you're still willing to call them disruptive players, continue to set new visions and cut through the clutter and offer new choices and raise expectations. And somewhere along the way, the technology leapfrogged staff's abilities to use the technology. So it's time to learn what's truly possible here. And number three, we better understand consumer experiences when we understand what types of engagements are possible. Experiences are made up of dozens, hundreds, or even thousands of engagements. They're the atoms of an experience's molecular structure, if you will. And believe me when I say there is a need to understand these basics better, because if you catch a health system innovation leader in a moment of candor, they might just say that they don't have a plan for engagement yet. So this season, you'll hear about three focus areas: engaging through partnerships, engaging through personalization, and engaging through preventive health. We'll explore what it looks like from the health system point of view, as well as adjacent areas including connected fitness, weight loss, food as medicine, wearables, retail health, health at home, direct primary care, wellness products, and more. So season 11, bring it on. You'll want to check yesterday's thinking at the door and pay attention this season as we do the deepest dive anywhere on how to engage the modern health consumer. That's another way that we'll build the healthcare of tomorrow. And that's the flavor of the week. All right, everyone, let's get into the flow. This is a really special episode. We have the absolute pleasure of welcoming Doug Hirsch, the co-founder and chief mission officer at GoodRx. Yes, that GoodRx. So really excited to talk about some aspects of how consumers experience healthcare, maybe some things that we haven't gotten the opportunity to touch on as much on this podcast over the last couple of years. And yet here we are. We're going to tie in a few different things. We're going to talk about a lot of where healthcare hits us, namely in the pocketbook. Why do these things happen? What's being done about it? What can be done about it? How does that impact how you seek care and, you know, how care models are even designed? There's so many ways we can go with this. So let's find out what happens next. Doug, welcome to the Healthcare Wrap.
Thanks for having me, Jared.
For those who don't know you well, can you give us maybe like the 2-minute version of who you are and what you're all about?
I think mostly I'm just a frustrated healthcare consumer who, like almost every American out there, feels like the cost of their care and the quality of their care is not necessarily increasing. And it's just become incredibly frustrating to stay healthy in this country. And so, you know, I've worked at GoodRx now since we founded it about 14 years ago. But I still think of myself as just really the ordinary American consumer who's just trying to figure out a way to get from point A to point B in healthcare. My background's more in technology. I don't think of myself as a healthcare lifer. And I really just try to figure out ways that we can take all the same consumer motivations that they have in other industries, whether they're buying a car or a TV or whatever, and really apply that to healthcare so that we can be more educated and more active participants in our own care.
All right, I've got a lot to go on already then. There's a few different questions that come to mind, but let's start with like a layperson's description of GoodRx.
Yeah, I mean, GoodRx remains very true to its original mission. You know, I founded GoodRx way back when in 2011, and the premise really was a personal experience that I had had. I walked into a local chain pharmacy with a prescription in hand, and the pharmacist said it would be $500, and that was just an extraordinary sum of money because I had insurance. And like most Americans, I thought, you know, you get a job, they say you have insurance coverage, you think you're good. And, you know, I was shocked to see a price that was that high. And I took this prescription back. I went to the other chain pharmacy across the street, and it was half the price. I took it to a third pharmacy where they said it'd be $400, but there were ways to save, and all this information I didn't know anything about. And that was really the genesis and remains the guiding force of GoodRx, which is we just want to give people answers and information and education. All these things that we take for granted, again, that you have in other industries, you don't just call United Airlines and buy a plane ticket anymore. Of course, you go online, you compare prices and schedules, and you come up with the right, you know, solution for you. And yet we don't do that with our healthcare. And we have very limited tool sets, and so much of the data remains locked up. what's amazing about GoodRx, if you can fast forward to today, is, you know, we have incredible savings on both generic drugs as well as brand. And we can talk about that today too. We've saved almost $75 billion for consumers, over $15 billion last year alone. More than 25 million people used our product in 2023. The vast majority of American healthcare professionals use GoodRx as part of their practice because, you know, as frustrated as consumers can get, doctors get even more frustrated when they know what you need to stay healthy, but then you just don't buy it because it's $500 like it was for me. And, you know, for all the progress that we've made and all the pride I have in what we've done, we have so far to go because, you know, the health system continues to degrade. The amount that a consumer has to pay out of pocket continues to go up. And so, you know, by no means are we anywhere close to done. You know, I'd say the problems continue to mount and we're going to be here to help consumers figure it out.
Let's start with the price part. Let's talk about where those are today. Let's talk about out-of-pocket maximums, other factors that are impacting medication costs. You know, we always hear, costs are going up, but let's dig into what's behind all this.
Yeah. So, you know, if you go back to when I first entered the workforce, you know, you typically have these formularies that in PBMs and insurance companies, of course, would put out for their covered lives. And, you know, they would be maybe if you, you know, a normal plan might have like a tier one, tier two, tier three, where it would be like $10 and then $30 for tier two and $50 for tier three. But, you know, because of the rising cost of healthcare, and I want to be careful about pointing fingers because if we want to talk about who's to blame, that's a whole nother discussion. But the short answer is that the consumer ends up with all these new things come aboard they never knew about. I mean, most consumers don't even understand what a deductible is, let alone a maximum out of pocket, let alone an accumulator, let alone a copay or a prior authorization or step therapy. All these fancy words started coming into the healthcare lexicon, all of which, you know, really just said, hey, you're going to pay more and I'm going to pay less, or I'm going to put all these hurdles in your way to prevent you from getting the thing that you and your physician think you need. And so, you know, if you look at the normal healthcare, you know, normal PBM setup for a consumer today, you might have as high as five tiers. You may have co-insurance instead of a copay, which is a way more expensive option for most consumers. As you said, you've usually got a deductible in some capacity. It may or may not apply to your prescriptions. And then, you know, the vast majority of brand drugs have prior authorizations or step therapy or quantity limits. And not to mention even shortages, which we haven't talked about, where even if you can get through all that, the drug may not be available at your local pharmacy. Prescriptions are huge. It's a $400 billion. Actually, I think I just saw a new stat that it was over $700 billion is spent in this country annually. You know, that goes between brand, specialty, of course, and generics. We started in generics. We actually, again, have this growing business in brand as well. But for the average consumer who just, look, I got a job, it had insurance, I want to take care of my family, that's not enough, right? And they're still being hit with these incredibly high bills and or processes that they have to go through in order to get the kind of coverage that they require to stay healthy. So I would say it's a really tough spot for most Americans to be in because they're being thrown obstacles in front of them that they never anticipated and frankly don't understand. And that's, again, where we try to help.
What does that do at a base level for a typical person who would benefit from getting that prescription filled, but they get lost in that aspect of the experience? They just don't feel comfortable. And then they start to become unsure of whether they need that. And now they definitely don't want to pay what they're going to have to pay. And it wasn't clear to them what they're going to pay. Right? There's all these parts that just lead to, I mean, in my mind, like that leads to ultimately seeking less care, but like, I'm sure there's more to it.
We should take each category separately just because you see different dynamics. So for generic drugs, I mean, generic drug costs actually have not gone up significantly. It's just the consumer's out of pocket has gone up, right? So the aggregate cost for generics has been more or less consistent, in some cases actually declining for the average American. But just because you have insurance, again, doesn't mean you're paying the right price. And what GoodRx does, again, is we bring together billions of data points. We make it literally as simple as when you're like using a, you know, buying a plane ticket. So a consumer types the name of the drug and they'll be able to see our discounted prices. Again, we aggregate pricing from multiple PBMs into one place. The consumers don't know any of this stuff. They just know that if they go to CVS, it's going to be $6.73. And by the way, that price may or may not be better than your insurance. If it's not, great, use your insurance. We're thrilled. Right. And in fact, GoodRx is often built into insurance. We have this program we call Integrated Savings, where in some cases, GoodRx actually is the backstop, which will help a consumer who has a drug that's not covered. Actually, even when you're using their insurance, they get the benefit of GoodRx. Anyway, put that aside, though. Your insurance price might be X, your GoodRx price might be Y. Again, if the GoodRx price is lower, great, take advantage of it. Of course, if you don't have insurance, GoodRx will definitely help you save against the, you know, the typical list retail price that a drug has, which can be hundreds of dollars for something that should cost just a few bucks. On the brand side, whole different thing, as you know. You've got to go through the process. Oftentimes, it's the physician who knows, hey, when I prescribe this drug for, you know, for my patient, they're going to get prior auth. There's going to be all sorts of coverage issues. They're going to have to go through a step therapy process. You know, the PBM is going to do everything in its power to make sure that they either don't take this or do take the appropriate methods to do it. But again, for a consumer, there's so many forms of savings, whether it be a patient assistance program, a copay card. You know, and again, GoodRx often is working directly with pharma in many cases to help consumer find savings that can really bring down the cost of brand or specialty. And again, that's often driven by the physician who often, you know, takes a more active role typically on brand. So that's just to give you a sense of kind of the things that are happening behind the scenes here. But again, to the consumer, we're trying to give them the simplest, easiest answer, actually for both the consumer and the physician, to basically say, hey, if you just take these steps, you can, you know, you can get the drug for a very reasonable price. Because oftentimes those prices are super reasonable. You just have to do your homework first.
Yeah. So is that still where GoodRx focuses, like helping do the homework essentially as part of that? Like what all are the ways that GoodRx does help you when it comes to those rising costs?
Yeah. I mean, what's funny about our product is, again, I've been doing this for 14 years. It's really just like three pages. You come to GoodRx, you get a search bar. You start typing the name of the drug, we help you spell the name of the drug because oftentimes people don't even know the name of the drug they're on. It's, you know, Rasuva something, right? And so we'll help you spell the drug. Well, then literally we'll figure out your location and we'll show you the list of pharmacies near you. And again, underneath it, there are hundreds of millions of price points, billions of price points. We're not showing you all those. We're just showing you the best option for you, right? And again, most consumers don't necessarily go to the cheapest place. They're not going to drive, you know, 100 miles to go to a Walmart if it's not near them. But it's good for them to at least have that information, just like you do, again, with any other product. And so what we do is we really spend tremendous amounts of time thinking about what not to show you, right? Don't overwhelm the consumer with information and words and restrictions and limitations, all these things they can't do. Let's talk about, we actually sort of coined the word coupon in healthcare because to be honest, it's exactly what happens. There's a list price. And then when you present a GoodRx coupon, you save a lot of money. It's as simple as that. And so again, that's the process for a consumer remains incredibly simple. For all the work that we do behind the scenes, and it's incredibly complicated, working directly with pharmacies, working with PBMs, working again with multiple constituents in all those cases, working with pharma manufacturers, working with physicians. We do all this fancy math underneath, but to the consumer, they just see the pharmacy name and a price. And again, if they present this coupon, which has the same exact kinds of numbers that they have with their insurance, they just pay that price. And, you know, I can remember back again to 2011 when I first had that experience. You just never knew. Think about any other product or service you consume in America where you consume it first or you're standing at the counter and then you find out the price, right? It never works that way, except in healthcare, of course. That's that holy grail that we're pursuing.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the parts that's most fascinating about the GoodRx story is that we hear so many times from so many other pockets of the industry, the complexity, and we just accept that we can't get through it or get around it. Like we just accept certain things as fact. This thing's just going to be complex. It's never going to be transparent. It's never going to make sense to the consumer. And we just kind of throw up our hands and say, it's the system. I didn't build that part. You know, there's nothing to do. We just can't make progress there. And what I've heard just over and over and over again, not just, you know, from you today, but, you know, just observing being a GoodRx customer myself, member myself, I can say this is a very deliberate way to say we figured out some parts of the experience that we can do something about. And part of that is that thinking that you just said about what not to show people on a screen or when they're logged in, not making it worse by overwhelming them with additional information. That's half of the experience in healthcare is let's give you all these things, all this information. And that just makes it worse a lot of times.
And you have to think about the downstream effects too, right? I mean, you know, obviously we spent the last few minutes here talking about purchasing a prescription at the pharmacy counter, right? But when consumers don't purchase it, and I've sat with many pharmacy executives who say once a drug gets over 20, 25 bucks, people just say, ah, screw it, I won't get it. And of course you think about that transaction in and of itself, but then you don't realize, okay, so now the consumer has stopped taking their heart medications, right? And now the consumer ends up, you know, having additional medical issues, may end up in the ER, may end up not being able to work, take care of their children. I mean, the downstream effects are huge, right? And consumers have filled over 184 million prescriptions using GoodRx that they otherwise simply literally would have walked away and not purchased. We've saved the healthcare system over $5 billion in preventable ER visits and hospitalizations. You know, these are the kinds of things that we don't think about. We think about that individual transaction. But when you stop taking the medication you're supposed to take and you're not adhering to your regimen, you have these incredible downstream effects, which honestly, we talk about dollars and cents and profit and loss. I think about the country as a whole. I think about our health system as a whole, where we have all these incredible cost as a result of just making it so hard for people to get from point A to point B and just fill their prescription at that counter.
No, that's a good reminder to me, because we've taken that conversation in the past about what happens when we don't seek care, that there's that ripple effect as well, and costs rise because down the road, you still have to get that thing taken care of, and now you're in worse shape. So this aspect is kind of in line with that, of what happens when you don't fill that prescription, and what you don't think of. You know, health system XYZ, pharmacy XYZ, retailer XYZ may not be measuring that part of it, or they're just like, that's not up to us. We wrote the prescription, you didn't fulfill it. You know, but it's this awareness of those downstream effects on, like you said, on society overall. It's not just what happened for that health system, you know, for the provider, for anyone in the chain. So I love that thought, because like, we need to expand our thinking and be considering that more often, I feel like.
Well, most of, you know, the average American is employed at in a specific job for about 3.6 years. And that's important, because if you think about it as a commercial entity, why does my employer care about, if I don't take my heart meds now, what happens when I have a heart attack when I'm 70 or 75, right? And so we tend to be very both myopic and obviously, and just short-sighted, I think, when it comes to care in this country. And we just think, okay, if I can contain costs for my employees now, again, it's not my job to worry about you when you're later on in your Medicare and you're down the road. Now, many, many Americans, even when you're under a government-driven health plan, you're still not seeing that kind of preventative care steps that people need, right? You're still seeing too many people show up in the ER, use their ER as their doctor. I mean, you know all these stats. You run a healthcare podcast, so I'm sure you're aware of the dire state and the most expensive route that we tend to push consumers into, versus just doing the simple, low-cost preventative steps, especially with some of the technologies that are coming along. And we can talk about not just AI, of course, but all these incredible things consumers can do with wearables, et cetera, to basically stay healthy and not end up in the ER in the first place. But again, most of our emphasis and most of our spending in this country is still both reactive and administrative, where so much money is spent on documentation and approvals, all this kind of stuff back and forth and all the paperwork, or again, reacting and having fully staffed hospitals and ERs when people weren't doing those preventative things in the first place. And that's really when I think about like what I want my calling to be, I want to continue to chip away at that, because we actually can make a real difference in the health of everyone in this country. And not only that, but also our national debt and the expenditures of this country.
Absolutely. You know, let's have that as our North Star. Let's have that as our goal here. Related to that, I want to share some research that GoodRx put out in 2023, which among other things, has showed that 39% of people made some change to their medication regimen due to cost. So related to what we were just talking about. But what else did that research tell us about the challenges facing patients? Because again, I feel like just the more that research helps us acknowledge how a patient or a consumer or a family member approaches their care or the care of their loved ones, the more that we truly understand that point of view, the more that informs us in how we create these solutions for the industry. What else about the research was helping us understand those challenges that are facing patients?
One of the things I'm most proud of, we have a research organization here that is really trying to shine light on that out of pocket, right? Because you'll read, everybody's got headlines of the $100,000, the $1 million drug, or the biosimilar or whatever. There's always headlines about these crazy retail prices for drugs, which ask, and anyone who really knows this business knows, people are not really paying that MSRP effectively, right? They're paying a discounted price. There are all sorts of ways that someone can bring down the cost as long as they know them, right? So we really focus on the actual out-of-pocket. We focus on, if your wallet had $26 in it before and it has 10 now, you spent 16, right? And that actually is very hard to come by, that information, because so much of this information, as you know, is locked up and it's not something that's easily accessible to the physician and again, to the patient. This research that we've done is just, you know, highlights the pain, again, the consumers are feeling both at the pharmacy counter and just as part of the health system. Great example. I think I saw a stat that for almost 20% of Americans, they pay over $1,200 per year for the most expensive medication. That's just a huge number, right? And by the way, this is probably research before the rise of Ozempic and the GLP-1s, right? Where I'm sure they're paying way more than that, because if you're not finding coverage in GLP-1s, you could be paying $500 to $1,000 a month. These are huge numbers for Americans who don't have that kind of savings and don't have that kind of resources available to them. And so they end up in debt. And I think another stat that we found was a quarter of Americans tap into their savings to pay for their prescriptions. So this is not like their working income. They're actually going deeper into the hole in order to just pay for their prescriptions. And then, of course, state the obvious, when you make drugs cost more or cost too much, people just don't adhere. And you often see people skipping medications or just abandoning them altogether simply because it just costs too much, especially if it's asymptomatic, right? Like, yeah, I don't have to take these heart meds. I don't feel any different tomorrow, but you will in, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 years, right? Let's see, one other stat, over a third of Americans have difficulty affording their prescriptions, right? So that's, what is it, 100 million Americans who are struggling to just stand at that counter to actually just purchase the drug. So I could give you more and more stats. They all really line up in saying that, again, as more and more of the burden gets forced onto patients, they find it harder and harder to both navigate the system and ultimately just stay on therapy.
If I'm a health system leader, I just think, well, here are the things that I care about. We're going to provide high quality care. We're going to try to make it more accessible. We're going to try to, when you become a patient, that patient experience is, you know, is more positive than it used to be. I don't know if it'll ever be perfect, and that's okay. But, you know, can we make progress with what that experience is? And, you know, the word out there on the street, you know, is still, for the most part, people are satisfied and they're happy with the care they get. It is all of these things that happen before and after the actual encounter. So this is maybe the biggest one, biggest thing that happens before or after your visit.
Well, this is the one that's likeliest to change, I think, also, because, like, look, if you're having open heart surgery, you're not just going to go to the lowest price vendor, right? But when it comes to, you know, purchasing a generic medication, which millions of people take, hey, I'm okay going to pharmacy A versus pharmacy B. It's also something I pay with my, you know, I pay with a credit card. I do it at a counter. I do it frequently. These are very similar to other types of transactions consumers have when they buy groceries or buy, you know, anything else. So I think, you know, prescriptions were the first, you know, the domino to fall, I guess, in terms of like really activating consumers and giving them the tool set. It's much harder when you start to compare prices around, again, major surgeries or very complicated procedures or multiple day hospital stays. We're going to continue to try and knock those down too. There's a lot of other companies doing some pretty cool stuff around that, but it's very, very hard. And for a whole variety of reasons we can get into.
Let's talk about like where GoodRx is focusing like for the next 6 to 12 months, 24 months.
So we continue to focus first and foremost on our bread and butter, again, is generic drugs. And, you know, everyone rolls their eyes with generics and everyone in the industry doesn't really think about generics because they're past the patent and they're past the fancy sales budgets and the ads on TV and all that. But they do represent up to 90% of the fills that Americans have, right? So it's like no one pays attention to it. And yet it's actually the Wild West. It's where prices vary the most. So we continue to focus on ways that consumers can save with their generics, whether it be GoodRx Gold, our subscription platform, whether it be this integrated savings program that I mentioned, where we work directly with PBM so consumers can realize the benefit of GoodRx without even having to pull out a GoodRx card. It just automatically works. And then, you know, anything else we can do to help fix both cost and convenience around generics. More recently, we started to focus on brands and we work directly with a huge number of pharma companies who, again, don't expect you to pay the bazillion-dollar list price, very much want you to pay a fair price for it and want that consumer to fill that drug. And so we're working directly with them. We work with a whole variety of different ways to basically educate consumers. Okay, so you need this drug, not just consumers, by the way, consumers and physicians, on all sorts of strategies so that they can get on and stay on therapy when it's a brand drug. Because as you know, there's all sorts of friction points that happen that will get in the way between you getting that brand drug, you know, at a price that you can actually afford. So that's a big focus for us. It's a huge, huge business. Again, it's like I said earlier, it's about 700-ish billion, I think, a year now. So those are our primary things. We really focus not just on, again, affordability, but also convenience. Because, you know, people are, you know, they may have a certain preference. I like a certain pharmacist. I like a certain physician. I like whatever. Great. We want to work with whatever the consumer's constraints are, but just help them navigate and understand what's going on and understand both how to use their benefit as well as when the benefit doesn't cover it, here's your next best option. And so those are the things we really spend a lot of time.
I feel like that does shine through in the simplicity of the information that is conveyed. It does. It makes a big difference in how to understand it.
I think some of the other industry focused things that we're focused on as well, because you do have an industry, you know, audience that listens to these podcasts. We are working very directly with pharmacies, which is a relatively new thing for us. In the past, we, you know, if you go back to the origins of GoodRx, we mostly gathered PBM contracts that PBMs had with pharmacies, and we were effectively a third, you know, we didn't have a direct relationship with the pharmacies. And I'd say over the course of the last few years, we've made tremendous progress of working directly with the pharmacy, because we very much view ourselves as Switzerland. We just want to get along with everybody with the ultimate goal of helping the patient. And obviously people can have, they can be at odds, you know, an insurance company may be at odds with a pharmacy because they both, you know, are on the opposite ends of a transaction. We want to make everyone happy and ultimately be the voice of the consumer who, again, is just looking for a simple solution. And so we've made a ton of progress in working directly with pharmacies to say, hey, what price is going to work for you? that's going to get additional people to come into the store, going to get someone over the hump so that they can actually, you know, afford the medication that they want to enact. Frankly, like, again, other industries do, where you can actually use price sensitivity to get to a price a consumer can afford. And again, we're working directly with manufacturers, working directly with physicians. In fact, we have custom tools just for physicians so they can look things up.
I like just kind of peeling back, you know, some of those layers and helping people understand the work that's being done and to what end, right? You know, that's what we've been talking about this whole time. To that end, we do talk about a lot of innovations that help consumers. And again, a lot of times we've focused on maybe the digital side or the retail side. And this has been such good color to add to that story. What do you think we might be talking about this time next year when we're talking about, hey, some innovation that made healthcare easier for either the people receiving the care or the people providing the care?
As we touched on earlier, I'm obsessed with preventative care. I almost think of it more as like anticipatory care is where I want to get to. Where today, great example, I just realized it's been over a year since I saw my primary care physician. And I forgot that my primary care physician didn't reach out to me because they're overwhelmed and swamped and frankly not being reimbursed probably as well as they should be anyway for that visit. And so I get this once a year if I'm lucky, or by the way, that's assuming you even have a primary care physician, which I think something like 25% of Americans don't. You know, I have a once yearly or less touch point with the healthcare system. And that's terrible. What I want is an ongoing relationship with the healthcare system 24/7. So for example, if you're wearing an Apple Watch or any sort of wearable, that information should become part of your medical record. If you want to wear any of the new, relatively new monitoring systems, like a CGM, for example, or you know, VO2 monitor, or even just step counter or any sort of activity monitor, especially for older Americans, as we talk about, like, are they moving around? Are they getting up and out of their house? Are they interacting with other people? Are there any cognition tests? Even just, I was talking to someone recently who, by listening to someone's voice, you can actually diagnose a whole series of different potential issues. And so like, what would happen if we had a 24/7 doctor with us? And I'm not even talking about AI yet. We can get there in a second, but just starting to aggregate all the information about a patient into a place where you can have it. Like, I just always feel like it's so silly. Once a year, I go to my doctor and says, what's been going on last year? And of course, whatever happened to me last night is the thing I'm going to talk about, but not the other 364 days a year. And to be able to serve that up to a physician in a correctly annotated and summarized way, right? The other thing physicians hate, they tell me all the time, I walk in with a stack this high of web pages I printed out from WebMD and say, I think I have all these conditions, help me figure this out. And again, making sure that people are compensated for it, because one of the big problems is a physician, I'm like, you're handing me all this data and information, but I'm not being paid for it. So why am I reviewing this, right? So we have some challenges for sure, but I think that technology that's coming can do a great job of summarizing and watching. And then actually the dream is it reaches out to me and says, hey, Doug, I've noticed something about this thing, which has become abnormal. And I took the liberty of either booking an appointment or let's, you know, summarize what the issue might be or finding you a specialist or whatever the thing is. And actually have, again, anticipatory healthcare, I think, where like this is not just preventative, but also like literally like saying, this is what we think is going to happen based on what's the behaviors that you're showing. So those are the things I dream about. Just to give my 2 cents on AI, you can imagine how powerful that could be to this whole process. But I'm sure everyone who comes on your podcast talks about AI, so I'll keep it short. You know, I dream of a system where, again, the healthcare system comes to me in the time, shape, form, and way that I want it to, and that I can have a more dynamic relationship, which ultimately improves my health.
Anticipatory care. I'm going to remember that. Any final thoughts we haven't discussed or any message you'd want to share with our listeners that we haven't gotten to yet?
For all my doom and gloom about the state of care and consumers not being able to afford prescriptions and stuff, I am actually really excited about where we're going. I think there's a realization, both not just from consumers and physicians and everyone else, that the system is broken. I think Washington and even both state and federal agencies are looking at ways that we can improve access to information, increase transparency, and ultimately take advantage of all these tools that are coming down the road to give consumers hopefully more affordable and better and more frequent access to the health care that they deserve. So I actually am pretty hopeful that these innovations will come and that consumers will, you know, ultimately innovation tends to lower cost, right? So we should see some outcome of that at some point. And so I'm excited. I'm excited for, you know, all the other companies doing cool stuff around you know, again, care delivery. We should talk about telemedicine in a whole separate podcast. But I guess I remain optimistic that both, you know, pressures as well as opportunity will drive improvement for people's lives.
Well, what a place for us to end up here, Doug. That's a wrap for this episode. I want to thank you for giving us so much time and so much to think about today. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with Doug Hirsch from GoodRx. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jared.